four former private security guards were convicted yesterday for the killings in Baghdad 7 years ago of 17 Iraqi citizens, including women and children. Many of the victims were shot inside their cars as they tried to escape the violence. The guards were employees of Blackwater, just one of the many private security contractors that the U.S. military hires to provide defense services. Private military and security services have grown into a multi-billion dollar industry, providing everything from weapons repair and armed escorts to cybersecurity and intelligence gathering. While the U.S. relies increasingly on contractors, they continue to be shielded from scrutiny and oversight. Author and journalist Anne Hagedorn opens a door for a look at Blackwater and other private defense contractors. After the news from NPR. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Welcome to our second hour, and thanks for joining us. The private military and security industry is larger than most Americans can imagine. Military contractors are now part of a billion-dollar industry with unprecedented involvement in war and defense. These companies enjoy little oversight and increasing necessity as the U.S. military becomes more and more reliant on them. Contractors provide services ranging from arms procurement and policing to intelligence gathering and border patrols. At least 90% of U.S. diplomatic security is provided by private contractors now. A congressional report in May 2011 found that in the previous two-year period to that, private defense contractors outnumbered traditional troops in Iraq and Afghanistan by a 10-to-1 ratio. In that same period, casualty totals for private contractors in both countries surpassed military losses. Spending on contractors had turned security and military companies into a billion-dollar industry. While the figures are cloudy, estimates indicate that half of the Department of Defense's budget goes to private contractors. A report on defense contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan found that the second-largest budget item was nearly $40 billion in expenditures for, quote, miscellaneous foreign contractors. These contractors were unnamed, and the U.S. government was unable to determine which companies were hired, how much they were paid, or what services they provided. In Anne Hagedorn's book, The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security, she traces the expansion of private military and security companies from post-World War II through the Cold War, through Iraq and Afghanistan, and takes a look at where all this is headed in the future. Anne Hagedorn is joining us in this hour of Midday, author and journalist Anne Hagedorn. She's a former staff writer for The Wall Street Journal and author of four books, and now the fifth one I just mentioned, The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Anne Hagedorn, thank you for joining us here in WYPR in Baltimore.
Oh, thanks, Dan. It's an honor to be here.
I want to go right to the Blackwater case because that's so fresh, and it's interesting that that name Blackwater might have faded out of the minds of some Americans who remember hearing so much about it during the Iraq War. This is a case with a jury verdict yesterday that goes back to 2007. And I want to read a comment here from the U.S. attorney in Washington with regard to this case, and then you can unpack it all for us. We'll step back and go over this case from 2007 in Baghdad. But Ronald Machen, Jr., the U.S. attorney in Washington, said, This verdict is a resounding affirmation of the commitment of the American people to the rule of law, even in times of war. 7 years ago, these Blackwater contractors unleashed powerful sniper fire, machine guns, and grenade launchers on innocent men, women, and children. Today, they were held accountable for that outrageous attack and its devastating consequences for so many Iraqi families. So, Anne, Let's go back to September 2007 and this particular incident, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, well, I find it a great bit of timing that I'm on your show the day of the reporting of that verdict that occurred yesterday, because it appears to be, because you don't see the name Blackwater in headlines, and Americans believe that since we withdrew from Iraq, because Blackwater doesn't exist anymore, it doesn't appear to anyhow, then it's over. Then it's something in the past, and then you see a verdict like this. So, okay, the trial for something September 16, 2007, 7 years ago, it's over. But the truth is that it's not. The verdict in this case is over. There'll be the sentencing coming up, but we have to look at the significance of this in terms of the legal accountability of the private military and security companies, and the fact that they have not gone away. Blackwater changed names, ownership, and is now part of a larger company with another name. And so, the actual privatization of defense and security, the vast array of services offered by these companies, has not only not gone away, but it has virtually worldwide expanded into bona fide industry. So that's fact number one. That's something that really should be paid attention to. And, you know, what does it mean, not just about the past? We don't file this away in the past, but what does this mean in the present? What does it mean in the future? And you and I, we can discuss this. But also, one thing I'd like to call attention to that I've noticed in the last several years, and because it was so hard to figure this out when I was working on the book, but I wanted to put together a list of the 14 people who were killed that day, and publish that. That should be in every newspaper today, so that Americans can get a feeling for these 14 unarmed Iraqis who were simply at a Baghdad traffic circle around noon on September 16, 2007. You know, we really should put ourselves in the places of those families, the children who were orphaned, the parents who lost their children. And when you look at the list, and it really has an effect on you. And so when we cover this, I think this incident, this war massacre, wartime massacre, then I think that there needs to be some recognition for the people who died that day and the significance of that.
Let's start with some of the details here, because, you know, some people are probably still confused about this. They think, weren't they troops? Who were these Blackwater guys? So we sort of have to start from scratch on September 16th, 2007. Blackwater security guards, they were providing security for a convoy, right, Ann?
That's right. That's exactly right, yeah.
And what happened?
Well, they were providing service for a convoy that was driving into this Nisr Square, which was a traffic circle, like I said, around in Baghdad around noon. And the big issue in the trial has been that they were driving toward that the four contractors at the time were responding. When they began shooting, they were responding to bullets. And so they were responding to an onslaught of fire aimed at them. And you'd have to look at the details of the trial, but that was obviously something that the jury decided was not true. But that was basically the defense in this trial. And so they opened fire. I think one of the most dramatic images which I do have in the book, the scene where there's a medical student and his mother in a car, and a dramatic scene where they are shot, and a police officer rushes to the aid of the doctor. The mother is a doctor, and her son is a medical student. He rushes to the aid. He's killed, and it's really it's a 10-minute segment in the lives of Iraqi citizens. And I think one of the things we have to look at, if you put together the scene of, you know, the police officer rushing toward the car, and then you have a 9-year-old child, a 19-year-old, a 12-year-old, all killed while riding in cars with their fathers, going around the circle. There was a father of 2 girls and a boy, father of 3 boys and 4 girls, including a newborn girl, and on and on. And so, you know, one of the issues here, of course, is you have to think, if children were orphaned, parents lost children, and city workers were then picking up the corpses and spending days cleaning up the blood and shattered glass, then imagine the pain and the anger of all who were touched by what happened that day. And then think about the recruitment power of that. And then you start to see some of the significance, more, you know, a larger significance of what it means to for a U.S. contractor to have been involved in something like that, and then it gives more meaning to the issues of accountability, I think, and transparency, and the verdict yesterday.
And I just want to say this, that during this hour with you, as we talk, we will go through more of the history here of privatization of the military, but this is so interesting. I thought we should spend a little more time on this at the beginning of the show. A couple of things I find extraordinary. First of all, this happened 7 years ago. At one point during the prosecution or the attempt to bring these charges, a judge threw out all the charges, but another prosecution team apparently salvaged this case. Another thing I find extraordinary is that witnesses from Iraq, some 24 of them, volunteered to travel to Washington to testify against these Blackwater security guards. So when I read that statement from the U.S. attorney at the outset of the show, this does affirm our system that even in a time of war, you can separate out fact from fiction through that, you know, fog of war to figure out what happened. And in this case, a jury decided this was a crime. This was not some battlefield tragedy, a mistake, but the result of a criminal act.
That's right. And that's it's a very important point. There are many this is a defining moment in many respects, I believe, because it shows the struggle for legal accountability. It shows, if you track the 7 years since it happened, see, the jury began deliberation on September 2nd, and so almost exactly 7 years ago this occurred. And you have to look at the impact that it had at the time. In the fall of, in the autumn of 2007, there were many congressional hearings because of this. There was a tremendous awakening at the time of some of the issues of accountability, the rules of engagement issues, what really happened here, and who's going to step forward and tell the truth, and what are the requirements for what are the possible pressures that can be applied legally to allow the truth to surface. So what happened in this trial revealed much of the truth, and the verdict is monumental. But like I said, in terms of recognizing not just what occurred that day, but also recognizing the courage and pain of the people involved, and then of the victims and their families, but also recognizing our need to say, okay, now we need more accountability. We need more transparency. We need to recognize our dependence on these companies. Yes, it's becoming a worldwide competitive industry. Actually, there was a report that came out a couple weeks ago saying that that in Russia it's a $7 billion industry now. So there are companies being in other countries that are competing with our companies and the companies in the UK. It's a bona fide industry. So this is just a reminder of the potential of what can go wrong. Go ahead.
I'm just saying we're time for a break here, and so we'll take a little break and come back and talk some more about the subject of your book, the privatization of the U.S. military. We're speaking here about Blackwater because of the case where verdicts came down yesterday against four Blackwater security guards convicted of murder, manslaughter, and weapons charges after that 2007 shooting of Iraqi civilians that Ann described. Ann is the author of The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. We'll go through some of this history leading up to the Blackwater period after we get back here on Midday. You're welcome to join us with comments or questions about this. 410-662-8780, toll-free long distance, 866-661-9309. And the Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. And welcome back to our show. Dan Rodericks here. Our guest in this hour is Ann Hagedorn, a journalist who's written four books and now a fifth one, The Invisible Soldiers, it's called, A Look Inside the Privatization of Military Services and Security Services for this country and around the world, how America outsourced our security. It's really interesting. Before I leave Blackwater, a couple of questions about Blackwater, Ann.
Yes.
First of all, there was a lot of public outrage over the shooting in Nasir Square in 2007, and because it seemed to be that something changed there in terms of Blackwater's status, its standing, that the company had operated pretty much with impunity, would you say, before this, and then it was kind of exposed in this incident? And then, so that's one question. The second question is, what's happened to Blackwater in the days since then? But to the first point, what about public outrage over Nasir Square and its effect on Blackwater?
Yes, well, it was, there was an outrage, and at the time of the massacre, and then there were congressional hearings. Like I said, there was one that on October 2nd that was very lively, that included the testimony and interrogation, effectively, of Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater, former Navy SEAL. and there were other congressional hearings. There were what came out of it in Congress was this three-year, at the very beginning of the show, you mentioned the report that came out in 2011, the congressional report. Well, that came out of this Congress's concern over what had happened, and that was a three-year, very intense study of private contracting in defense and security in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's a fascinating report that came out of it. With Blackwater, then evolved into I could write another book about Blackwater after 2007. There's been a lot written about it, but it changed its name eventually to XE, and then it became Academy. And Eric Prince sold it, and now Eric Prince is in Hong Kong running a company that works with that is in partnership with a Chinese conglomerate for the work of a $1 trillion infrastructure project in Africa. And so there were, because of the 2007 wake-up call. I think you see in the book, when you go into the trajectory of the industry, that that actually we had two wake-up calls. One was in 2004 when the Blackwater contractors, if you'll recall, in Fallujah were killed. And then we had this one as a reminder to the American public that this industry exists, or that these companies exist, that we are using private contractors for certain inherently governmental functions that once were handled by the Army or the State Department or even other agencies. But so that was definitely an awakening in that way. And there were bills, many bills presented to Congress in Congress after that to improve accountability and to demand more transparency, especially and one including the name changes. You know, we need to know these companies. I think it was John Tierney in Massachusetts proposed a bill saying we need to know these companies. If they change their names, we need to know that when they apply for contracts. Another issue that came out of this that has been introduced several times in Congress in bills has been subcontractors, because once a U.S. contract is given to a company, companies will often subcontract, and there can be layers, several layers of subcontracting. And so that brings up issues, of course, of accountability and transparency again. So I think the way to look at that and the answer to your question is that it was definitely a turning point. And we can call that a turning point in 2007 in terms of an awakening for a debate in Congress, a recognition by the American public. But then it sort of slipped into the folds again of the establishment and of other news events, and seemed to disappear. And actually, that is one of the issues I address in the book, is that it seems that the only time we, as citizens of a democracy, discuss it or are aware of it or think about it is when there are scandals. And
Let's talk about that.
Yes.
I think at this point in the show, you ought to take a minute here, a couple minutes, and explain to our listeners more than I did in the introduction here, just what the scope, the scale of this is. And when we talk about contractors, private contractors, the ones you focus on in your book, these are not people who build airplanes and bombs. This is private security, intelligence gathering. They have a bunch of different services that they provide. But give us a sense, would you please, just in terms of our country, the U.S., what the scale of this is? How many contractors? What's the dollar value in a given year? What are we paying out? So take your time with that, Anne.
Yes. Well, what we're looking at is, like I said, a bona fide industry of companies that some call the department stores of defense and security. They provide a vast array of services that have traditionally, throughout history in America, have been sometimes outsourced to the private sector, but never on the scope that we're looking at now. And that, I think, one way to help to explain it is that when Eisenhower talked about the military-industrial complex in 1961, he was talking about weapons makers, and that was a product-oriented defense industry. And so what we have now is very much a service-oriented industry, and that's what the book is about, and that's what I seek in the book to make Americans aware of. These are companies, many people call them mercenaries. And there is a debate, I think, among the people who are informed about it or learn about whether or not to call all of any company that is making money off the services connected with conflict, mercenaries. But I don't see it that way. I see that these are, mercenary brings up the image of the unsavory kind of old world hired gun involved in post-colonial and neo-colonial conflicts. And today's version is fundamentally different. The critical factor being that they're modern, that they are organized hierarchically into incorporated and registered businesses. They trade and compete openly on the international market. They link to outside financial holdings. They recruit widely. They provide a wide range, you mentioned some of them, of military and security services. Some are armed and some are unarmed. You know, and most, we think about logistics services in Iraq and Afghanistan. The name Halliburton comes up. And, then you don't think of armed services, but you have to remember that all of the logistics services, then all of the individual contractors involved in logistical services are armed, must be protected. And so there's that whole industry of armed security and contingency operations. So we depend on them for our contingency operations. But also, Dan, we depend on them after the drawdowns, after we leave. And there's a part in the book that I devote to that, to the discussions actually in Congress about what was happening in terms of private contracting when we left Iraq.
Well, where are we with that, Anne, today? Are there private contractors in Iraq today?
Oh, yes, there are private contractors in Iraq today. I can't give you the numbers today. I can give you close to the numbers in Afghanistan, though, because the latest report came out in late spring, in May, and there were 108,000 private contractors and 66 traditional troops. Of course, we are planning to lower that.
That's
traditional
amazing.
Troops.
What a ratio that is.
9,800.
Yeah, yeah. What a ratio that is. All right. I need to ask a question here. When you're looking at the history of the privatization of these services after post World War II, when you get to toward the end of the Vietnam era, 1973, the end of a draft, the end of the draft in the United States. Do you see an escalation of these services after that because we're just not drafting as many young men into service?
No. Where you see the beginning of the escalation is really after the end of the Cold War. And that, of course, there have been these companies and there have been private contractors from day one. I mean, we've always had them. It is, as you said earlier, it's now the scope. And as the report that you mentioned earlier stresses, it is now the congressional report is now our dependence, or as the congressional commission in that report said, our over-reliance on contractors. So that's what's very different. But you begin to see it at the end of the Cold War, and that's because really, I guess the best way to describe it is there was a displacement at the end. You know, there were military structures in both of the superpowers, and they were dismantled basically. And throughout history, if you see a drawdown in the military, there has been a rise of these companies. You can see it in the 14th and 15th centuries in Italy. But at the end of the Cold War, there was the beginning of a new era of privatization of defense and security. In the form, you had very experienced soldiers, bureaucrats, spies, and even assassins that were looking for work. Mm-hmm. And some formed companies, some were recruited into companies. And these companies, some had formed in the 1990s. And some had formed in the 1980s, but more in the 1990s. And then what you have is moving forward from the mid-1990s, you have several companies that are growing that we use. We use them a few in Bosnia. That was the first instance. I think the ratio there was 50 traditional to one contractor, 50 to 1. And then after 9/11, there was an increase in need because, you know, these are on-call companies, and that's one of the things they market is the quickness of their response to any drastic, urgent situation. And so then we have the war in Iraq. And that's when, as one of the quotes in the book says, that's when we took the mercenary seed and watered it big time.
Yeah.
And that was, we used them. We needed them. We used them. It was a bonanza. It was a bonanza of U.S. contracts. And so many new companies formed. And established companies developed subsidiaries that to supply services for the needs that were for the demand. And so then it grew. And
I want to ask you, just stop for a second and ask something. The reason I asked about the draft before is because everything you describe, all these services that they provide, and this the bonanza that we saw in the 2000s after we went into Iraq, all of this requires feet on the ground. All this requires manpower, womanpower. So when I think about the end of the draft and how we have an all-volunteer military, and I think of our politicians, I'm I guess a little cynical, and I'm thinking, you know, it's less political risky just to put out contracts and hire private forces than it is to try to recruit or draft the manpower, womanpower you need in order to provide all these services. The idea of private security providing security for our troops while they're on, I mean, there's a bit of a disconnect there because, you know, you think, well, we have a military because the military provides security. Doesn't the military provide security for itself? Why do we need to have Blackwater and other companies like that? It's because politicians don't want to draft. Go out to the public and say, we need your sons and daughters to come in and carry out these missions for us.
You just pointed out one of the most important features of this, and there is often a focus on cost benefits, which distracts people from the human cost or the psychological cost of doing this in a democracy, you know, removing the citizens from the involvement in their defense and security. But then there is the big issue that you bring out, which is operating. This allows politicians, policymakers to operate under the radar of public scrutiny. And, you know, it's not just the existence of these companies that allows that. I mean, it's, you know, they can be considered for different strategies and policies. It's also their on-call, very quick availability. So there is a problem. They can recruit people immediately for that problem who specialize in it. And we can, as a nation, it avoids the messiness of democracy, because democracy basically slows things down, right?
Yep.
We know that. But the restraint allows for discourse, discussion, debate. Is this the right thing to do? And sometimes when you talk to people in the military, they'll tell you that. I got an inside of the different components of this business and talked to many people in the military, and their concern was the very big difference between effectiveness and efficiency.
We're going to take another break here, Anne. Anne Hagedorn, our guest, former staff writer with the Wall Street Journal and an award-winning author. This book, The Invisible Soldiers, is about the privatization of the military and the scale of it, the scope of it. If you'd like to join us, please give us a ring with a question for Anne Hagedorn, 410-662-8780. That's the number for midday. How America Outsourced Our Security. We'll be right back. An email from one of our listeners, Patricia. After his inauguration, Ronald Reagan proudly signed a freeze on federal employment, and the age of contractors began. Bush got a blank check following 9/11. Experts on Homeland Security arose out of nowhere and got lucrative contracts, as your guest says. Edward Snowden was a contractor vetted by a subcontractor. Government work should be done by government employees. They should be well vetted, well educated, well trained, well paid, and sworn. They should be held to a high standard. It can be done. When we all stop hating the government and blaming it for all things evil, maybe we will have a fully funded FDA, CDC, and NIH. Maybe we will have vaccinations and educated populace. Maybe we will have mass transit that does not kill us with pollution. So I bet Patricia could go on and on with that. But her point with regard to what you're talking about here, Anne, gets me to the question I wanted to ask you. Why should we be concerned about this, about the growth of the privatization of security and defense services?
Well, Dan, that's the ultimate question. And actually, I've been on the road for about the last 6 weeks with this book, and that's what some people ask. Why should we care? I mean, if we just look the other way, have someone else do our dirty work. And the answer is first in the question itself, I think, because it's why would we be asking that question if we didn't have sort of a plague of indifference that we're dealing with regarding our involvement in these issues and in the issues of defense, who is defending us? So that's sort of the obvious answer. The easiest answer, but the other is, of course, the cascade of issues that sort of roll out of one word, democracy, and we need to be aware of this. Partly, what you just read, your caller, because of vetting, because of screening, we need to know who is defending us and securing us. We need to ask the questions to demand that because once, as I mentioned earlier, you issue U.S. contracts for these functions that were once performed by government employees and soldiers, you know, these are inherently governmental functions that we're outsourcing. And so because they are subcontracted, and we lose control over and knowledge about who they are. Mm-hmm. And we lose a sense of the impact of war. When you were talking about the draft earlier, that is a very fascinating part of this. Because, of course, when there was a draft, there were protests and there was a sense of the impact of war. And when you move forward to, I'm not advocating reinstituting the draft, but I'm advocating more accountability and transparency because we need to know the full impact. When we are told the casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan or any of our conflicts, are we told the number of private contractors? You know, at one point between 2009 and 2011, the number of contractor casualties exceeded traditional troops in Iraq. And or when we pulled out of Iraq, there were 8 MIAs, 7 out of the 8 were private contractors. I mean, as citizens, we need to know the full impact of war so we can speak up when and we can participate in the policy making And the choices that we make in terms of our involvement in conflicts.
Ann Hagedorn is our guest in this hour of midday. Ann, we're going to take some calls from our listeners here. Our time is short in this hour, and I'd like to get in as many comments or questions for you as possible. Ann Hagedorn's book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. We'll go to John in Baltimore, who's been holding to make a comment about Blackwater. Go right ahead, John.
Hi, good morning. I think there are multiple reasons why we should care about this. One, of course, is cost and spending. The other is accountability. Another is corruption. And the other is just how you add another layer to the chain of command who may not be answerable in a war situation to the superior officers who are controlling, say, the base or the mission. Because you're the security people and you're beholden to other people. I had experience with Blackwater employees in a number of times in Louisiana following hurricanes Katrina and Rita, those back-to-back storms. And they sent thousands of Blackwater employees down there. And I was employed as a photographer working for the government with a film crew to travel around. And I got to talk to a lot of these people. And one of the things they said, well, first of all, there was no accountability with them. In other words, if you were trying to get into film or photograph a particular place, even if you had the right clearance, if they said no, you had no recourse, because if it was a cop or, you know, policeman, you could go to his superior officer. With these Blackwater people, they were like these rogues who could do whatever they want. And that's one of the reasons they were there. But talking to them, they also all long to get back to Iraq because they made $1,000 a day each, mostly tax-free.
Thank you. All right, John. Did you have a question for Ann?
Well, I just think the whole thing is really sort of scary. Yeah. I mean, you know, Cheney, I think, was involved with this group. It's a lot of ex-military people. And, you know, from the Pentagon, not just this. I mean, the head of Blackwater was this special ex-Special Forces guy. But
yeah, he was mentioned. John, I have to go back to Ann here for this. Another caller questioned the connection between Dick Cheney, Halliburton, and Blackwater.
Oh, dear. Well, that's...
Is there a connection there?
Pardon me?
Was there a connection there?
Oh, between Cheney and Blackwater?
Yeah, or Halliburton and Blackwater.
Well, they were working together in Iraq, and to go through the discussion of so technically no.
Technically no.
Yeah, legally no.
Right, but a lot of these legally companies that you identify in the book, these contractors are often multinational corporations with subsidiaries, dozens of international offices. They're kind of all over the place, aren't they?
Yes.
Let's go to another call. Brad in Baltimore with a comment for Ann, our guest. Hi. Ann Hagedorn.
Oh,
hi.
Yes, I just wanted to comment that it's a little bit more specific in my mind. The fact that we have these mercenaries means we're a far more warlike nation. We do not risk anything. We don't, in terms of our sons and daughters, when we pick a fight. And so we're much more likely to pick fights. I just think it's changed our foreign policy, not just in abstract ways, but very specific ones. And that's all I just make.
Ann, what do you think of that?
Well, that's a very interesting comment, because some of the people who believe that these our use of them is wrong and believe that the fact that they exist and can be depended upon will affect our strategies, our policies, and could lead to perpetual war. And, you know, there's some people studying this period and putting it into historical context who believe that we are moving into sort of a neo-medieval era, into a period of like the Hundred Years' War, that kind of thing, and partly because we have the availability of companies that we can depend upon in going forward for strategies involved in conflicts. In other words, if they become part of our force structure going forward. then that allows us to be in more military interventions, or in more strategically in more places in the world. And there is the image that of the spear, and the tip of the spear, of course, being the combat, the traditional troops, what you envision as boots on the ground, and then the body of the spear, the private companies, the private sector, and that gives it the strength and allows us to continue to be involved.
And as far as the future goes, Anne, there's no reason to suspect or to expect that this is going to change, that this business model we have for military services is going to change.
I have a hard time answering that question, Dan. I don't know. There seems to be no, considering our dependence on the companies, considering the demands on us, the budgetary constraints, in the cost-benefit analysis in the near term, there is the possibility that they could save money in the near term. But the combination of that plus the demands worldwide for our involvement forces a situation where some people would say we have to decide on a foreign policy that is less involved in the world's in world's conflicts, or a more established branch of government, a fourth branch that is. Or a cabinet post, or a commission, a governmental commission, that brings the reality of privatized defense and security into the transparent scope and structure of the government. So in some respects, at this point in time, because of all of our stresses and demands internationally and domestically, it's very possible that those decisions and the defining moment that such decisions would force is not too far away. I mean, we have called the first Iraq, well, the Iraq war in the early 21st century, the first contractors war. And the big question is, are we looking now at the second contractors war? If that's true, there need to be changes. As I said, and as you've said, and as our guests have said, there needs to be more transparency, more accountability. We have to, as the commissioner said in the report you mentioned, we have to get out of denial.
Thank you very much, Anne Hagedorn, for your work on this book and for being with us on the show today. Anne?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Anne
Hagedorn.
Thank
you very much.
Okay. Anne Hagedorn's book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security, a deep look at the privatization of the U.S. military since World War II, and particularly during the last 10 to 15 years. That book is published by Simon & Schuster. I want to thank Breathe Bookstore Cafe for providing lunch for our guests today. Breathe Bookstore Cafe serves vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free savories, sweets, coffee, tea, juices, and more. Breathe Bookstore Cafe is open 7 days a week, and that's on the Avenue, 36th Street in Hamden. Back tomorrow for Midday Friday. Dr. John Smarr will be with us for Midday on Health as we look at Ebola and other viruses on the public health radar. And then a big survey of life on Earth with award-winning scientist Ruth DeFries. That's all tomorrow, noon to 2, here on Midday.